Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back, 51551. That is the text now before me this morning. Welcome to studio, retired Garda detective, author of Murder at Lordship, Pat Murray. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
I mentioned at the top of the show that you are our visiting critic.
Yeah.
And that we get people out of their comfort zones.
Yeah, you surely did.
It wasn't very obvious to us now what a retired Garda detective might be, the comfort zone or not. But we discovered country music is not your thing.
It's not my thing, no. I'm a trad man, like, you know, jigs and reels and that type of stuff.
And you mean, when you say you're a trad man, you're not just a fan, you play it?
I play traditional flute, yeah. And
what are you, flautist?
Yes, I play flute, yeah, self-taught. And I'll be in Mecca tonight and Matt Malloy's playing a few tunes.
You know? Oh, this is your comfort zone?
Oh, yeah.
Matt Malloy's is named by and for the Matt Malloy.
In Westport, yeah.
Expert flautist.
Yeah, whom I know, yeah. He was at the book launch and all, yeah. He's a great man, yeah.
Oh, my God. So I would have thought now Nathan Carter, because there's an accordion involved. Is there not a
bit of tragedy? Yes. He strangled an old reel last night. He played on it, like, you know, he's played it at the speed of light, but he was in keeping with what the audience wanted, a bit of up tempo and yahoo and, you know, clap your hands and wave around and all that type of stuff, yeah. But he was a fantastic artist and put
he
on
still that sound like it's trad, but it still sound like that way up the street of clad or trad.
Well, not when you play a reel at the speed of light. No. Okay. No. But look, he played very, very well, and his concert was very good. I was amazed at his vocal strength to sing for an hour and a half, and he didn't waver in any way.
Right.
And he sang.
It's a great voice, doesn't
yes,
it?
And he sang some lovely ballads. Now there was a group on before him warming him up, like, and they strangled a few ballads, like, but they were good musicians, like, you know.
Okay.
And they were good lads, and you know, they sang very well. But
this is already a very honest review.
Oh yeah, and
the warm up act,
but look, they were very good musicians and a good bunch of lads, and they warmed up the crowd and got them clapping, and you know.
Yeah.
Put them on the platform for Nathan to come in and
take
over.
How long did they play for?
They played for a half an hour.
Oh, that'd be perfect, yeah.
And they sang one of their own songs at the finishing off, which was the highlight of their half hour, like, you know, One for the Road. It was a good song, you know.
Oh, you actually thought that was the best?
Of that group, yeah.
Yeah,
because...
What ballad did they strangle on you?
Oh, what did they strangle? I don't know. They were banging it out. It all sounded the
you
same to me.
The
two beats in a bar. No, it's like, you know, just no, not for me. But Nathan came on, in all fairness, and he wooed the crowd and played. One of the first tunes he played was Leaving on a Jet Plane. I think is that Glen Campbell or one of those.
Yeah,
and he'd done it quite well.
Yeah.
Now he did obviously know that there was Scottish people in, and he just asked, "Is there any Scottish people here tonight?" And there was a big roar from the balcony.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he sang Caledonian and done a very good job
of
it.
It's a big hit of his, and he sells very well.
Yeah,
in Scotland.
He does. Yeah, so there's obviously a contingent over from Scotland for it, and he played very well. I have to say, like, it was a very good concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my daughter with me, Cheryl, who's a very good singer, and she has been at him a few times, and she's a fan, and she says, like, you know, now she wouldn't be buying the 10-gallon hat or the, you know.
No, but it highlights that he's a very young following.
Well, there was an eclectic mix there last night, young and old, and I thought there was probably more old than young.
Yeah.
Now, he really played up to everyone, like, and it was very good, like, you know. It's a good concert. It's just not my type of music.
No.
It's not my type of music.
It's not a slap down to the generation at it either. Obviously, the older bunch in Dublin can afford it.
Well, they love it, like, and he sort of was having the crack with him. He says, I'm going to sing a few songs now from Mayo. And there was an uproar, like, you know.
There was opposition to this.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. And he sang, I must say, and it was very well sung, Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, because he's an unusual.
And after he finished that, he got a standing ovation.
Go ahead.
So that's, you know.
That's how good it was.
That's how good it was, yeah. And I have to say, yeah, he was very good. And still didn't turn me on, like, you know. I was still thinking of jigs and reels and Matt Malloy.
You're not going to be converted to this hour of your life.
No, not at this age. But I'll tell you, he took a break at 10 o'clock and he went off for change his clothes and go to the jacks or whatever he does, I don't know. And he came back and he brought a female group out from Fermanagh. There were four ladies in it. Tully was the name of them. And they sang a song that he had recorded with them. Right. And it was very, very good. That was my highlight. It was very, very good. Right. And they had their vocals was something like, I don't know whether you would ever remember Kate and Anne McGarrigle. Nancy Griffith, that type of vocal
people will
and it was quite nice, like, you know. And then he went in then after that and he sang, you know, Remember Dublin in the Railroad Times and a number of Irish, let's say, Dublin ballads.
Makes sense, Dublin gig.
Yeah, and he executed them well. Like, you know, he didn't strangle them now. Like, he done them well. And
it sounds like he didn't strangle any songs.
Just, no, he didn't. Just the reel on the accordion, he you know. But
a reel on an accordion?
That he played a reel on the accordion. Yeah. Like, and, you know, it was...
This is your area of expertise. And
well, not when you're playing at the speed of light, like, you know. But anyway, look.
Okay, that's the one star review for that particular moment.
But anyway, look, he then went on and he sang Liam Riley's Bagatelle's Summer in Dublin.
Oh, I love that.
And he'd done a very good job of that. It was very good. And he got the crowd to sing along and, you know, and that's it.
Did you sing along, Pat?
I did, yeah. I got up and I was like, you know, and, you know, all that type of stuff. But he got the crowd, you know, but you could see the diehard fans right up the front, like the first five or six rows were just Nathan Carter fans, like, you know. Yeah, but he is a good artist, like, there is no doubt about it, and he's very good. But his vocal strength to keep that going for the hour and a half was quite impressive for me. Yeah,
there's a good band, isn't it? He's a
the
big
band. The band was superb. Mm. There's five of them in it. Organ, keyboard, rhythm and bass guitar, fiddle and the drums. And they were all excellent musicians, like, you'd know by them. They were very tight and very, very good, like, you know.
We should
say
as well, Nathan Carter, he tours so much. He's generally in big hotels, sometimes tents around the place. So Bord Gáis should be a much more kind of measured audience, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
because everyone's seated.
Yeah, everyone's seated. And it was 95% full, like, you know. There were still seats on the people, you know, tickets, obviously they weren't sold or whatever. But
well, 95% you'd take that
any day, yeah. But in essence, it's not my type of music. I don't be drawn to that type of stuff, like, you know.
But did you enjoy your night out?
I did enjoy it because I was with my daughter. We had a bit of crack. We had a talk. We had a bit of grub beforehand in Charlotte's Quay, and we enjoyed it. Yeah, we did.
This is a trip up to Dublin, because we should say to people, you don't live in Dublin.
I live in Mullingar, and my daughter lives in Wexford. So it's, you know, so that's
where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Navan.
Yeah, I knew there was a bit of northeast, all right.
Yeah.
But as a guard, you obviously never end up the place you grew up in, because you have to.
I was in Donnybrook here for the first year and a half of my career, and then I went to Blanchardstown. I was there for 10 years.
Right. What era were you in Blanchardstown?
I was there from 1987. To 97.
So it was exploding in the population.
Oh, it was exploding, and we had a lot of problems. Riots, stolen cars.
Riots?
Yeah. Like, I remember going to riots in Blanchardstown, up in the Fortlawn area at the time, and there'd be stolen cars flying around and fires, putting them on fires, and we'd have to get help from around the city to put on shields and helmets and all to quell it and everything, like, you know. So it used to be pretty hairy now, like.
Well, it wouldn't be that frequent, though.
And the Westie gangs were in their prime at that stage, you know. So look, we had it was an interesting time, and in my period there, I was on 11 murder investigations, like, you know, as a rookie, like, you know. And so that's
baptism of fire.
Baptism
literally.
Of fire, yeah. And, like, you know, Blanchardstown was part of Cabra and Finglas, like, you know, and we had that. They were vibrant places, like, you know, really, like, you know, you learned your policing skills, like, and that was it, you know.
The decent people of Blanchardstown have suffered.
Well, like, anyone going back to that, the 80s, like, you know. Then I got promoted and I was sent to Clonus, and I spent two...
Lovely part of the world, Monaghan.
Yeah, someone told me you were from Clonus, are you?
No, I'm South Monaghan, so Clonus, Osher, it's a different planet to the rest
I still have nightmares about
Wild
Fermanagh
West
Street.
Monaghan. Fermanagh Street and Clonus.
I spent 2 years there, but I did it in how to fight, my God, you know. It was the ritual, like, after the pub every night, come out and bait each other up and down from Anna Street, like,
you
know.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and sometimes there might be only two police on or three, like, you know. It wasn't.
There'd be no point arresting and charging people, were there in those days?
No, there was no point in even going near them, let them bait them. Oh, and I've seen some serious assaults. And you would ask the people, like, do you want to make a complaint? No, we'll sort it ourselves. That's the way it was up there, you know. And that was it. Just don't cooperate with the police. We'll sort it ourselves, you know. But there's some lovely people in Clonus. Now, really nice people I got to know.
Sure, there's geniuses in Clonus as well.
There is, yeah. There is, yeah. And but I must say, yeah, I enjoyed the 2 years there. Met, got to know a few people and this, that and the other. But it had a blanket of an air of, you know, the subversive thing, like, you know. What would you call it?
Well, you mean the provos? Is yeah,
and other people wouldn't. You know, you got hard to.
It's hard to get people to talk.
Yeah, you just don't.
Terrified.
Terrified. And then that's with that last investigation on poor Adrian Dunhill, like, you know.
It's one thing to be investigating murders, but when it comes to one of your own.
Yeah, and when I was his boss, like, and right. You know, you're only talking to him the day before, like, you know, it's horrendous, like, you know. Hugely upsetting, and it was like a sucker punch to every guard in Dundalk. It was really, it came out of the blue, like, you know, we didn't deserve it. Like, do you know what I mean? This is not supposed to happen. This is, you know,
especially in a time of peace.
Yeah, and I had it
where,
in
as you're describing, there was a lot of difficult moments over the years.
Oh, there was,
guards lost their life. You don't expect it to happen this era.
Yeah, but look, when you're dealing with a certain cohort of people who have been brought up with a certain degree of disrespect for authority, and where authority doesn't exist, you know, they have a feel they have a free rein to do what they want, and you know, and that's it. Just culminated in the them going to rob Lordship Credit Union and unfortunately shooting Adrian Dunhill in the middle of it, like, you know. So
unbelievable story. It shattered the country, really, didn't it?
It shattered the country, and that's why, like, you know, it had to be solved, like, you know, it had to be solved, and it took 5 years, but we got there eventually. And I always believe, like, I have a formula that I always stuck by for investigating serious crime.
Oh, yeah.
And it done me well, like, over the years, and I stuck with it. And
we got there.
Well, like, you know, if you ask someone what's a criminal investigation, you know, like, you know, you could even ask a policeman what's a criminal investigation, they wouldn't even know, like, you know, and it's the systematic approach to identifying, preserving, collecting, and analysing information. And that information can come in the form of a witness statement. The murder weapon left at the scene, forensic reports, CCTV, phone records, whatever, you know. And they all have to be analysed and looked at and see can they be brought on further. And you have to do it in a systematic approach. Because if you're slipshod in any way, you could lose that type of evidence or potential evidence, like, you know, through sloppy work, you know, and you could fall between stools, and then you have decisions to make in respect to where an investigation goes from here. And if you don't have the correct thought process on whatever evidence is presenting itself or stuff, you know, you can go in the wrong direction, like, you know. And
patience is a huge thing.
It is, yeah.
Particularly in the Adrian Dunhill case.
Yeah, and the thing about it too,
someone to slip up, didn't it, really?
And I would say to any senior investigating officer, there are four qualities that I always stood by, and I made sure that my team had the same, you know, that they had to be honest in everything they did. They had to be accountable. They had to be professional and respectful and responsible, and they're the things. And you wouldn't let the standards go down. And even on that investigation, there were people that fell under that. They were caught taking shortcuts, and I found out, and I showed them the marching orders: out the door, don't come back. That's it, you know, because you had to. You cannot.
Oh, really?
You cannot have an investigation.
Can't it be
compromised by sloppy work, and that's
right.
It. Because
you're a tough boss.
Because you'll be caught out in trial, like, you'll be caught out, you know,
okay,
and that's it.
Yeah.
And one of the loneliest places you'll ever spend on earth is in the witness box in the Central Criminal Court. And especially if you have a...
Is that because your work is on display?
Oh, it's on display, and that's it. And
you're being interrogated.
A defence barrister will be trying to undermine you,
yes,
and try to create a doubt as to your ability. So if he can create a doubt, it creates a doubt in the jury's mind,
course,
and that, you know.
That's
so
the
like,
reasonable doubt that they
yes,
have to
yes. And so, like, that's why you have to have those standards. you have to have those standards, yeah. You know.
And it's a hell of a job you took on, isn't it? Your career, like.
Well, yeah, well, sort of I fell into it, I suppose, really, in a way, like, you know, but I did like that type of work. And I got into it because when I was in Blanchardstown, I was involved, and I say it in my first book, the Marilyn Ryan murder investigation, and I was only what we call a bookshe detective. I was only a plainclothes guard, right, helping out the detectives, and I was trotting around making the tea and doing, you know what I mean? I was only down the... But I was seeing, I could see how they were putting the case together and what the structure was and how it came all about, you know, and that was eventually solved. And I really liked it. Like I said, I like this. So I sort of engineered myself to get into plain clothes to do that type of work. And it worked out, like, you know, and then I got my own, qualified as a senior investigating officer and stuff, and got the break in when I was in Drogheda. I was appointed then as a detective inspector. And I say it in my first book, like, the first day as a detective inspector, I was given a murder to do, and they kept rolling in after that, so I reckon there was something wrong with me. They just keep following me around, like, you know.
The murder at Lordship, by the way, I noticed in Dundalk only 2 weeks ago. It came out in May.
It came out on the 1st of May, and it was number
still
one.
Still selling really well.
It was number one for a couple of weeks, and it is within the first five. It hasn't dropped under the fifth position.
But the reading of Dundalk, that must mean something to you, because obviously up there in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is only 11 years ago since
But a few educated people I know very well have said to me, and both myself and Robin Schiller, who wrote it, that we'd done a very civic good, we'd done a public service by recording in the book everything that happened from that night right on.
Oh, very good.
And through the trial, because it was the longest trial in Irish criminal history.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
And it was the biggest murder investigation ever undertaken. Like, right. And I always, just to give your listeners the normal murder, if you could call it a murder normal, but would generate around 250 lines of inquiry. Mm-hmm. Adrian Dunne's had exceeded 6,000 lines of inquiry. And the management of that alone took a lot of thought.
Unbelievable.
And like, we had to get a special external hard drive built by Dell to house the CCTV footage that had been seized, like, you know. Wow. So that's how, you know, even the exhibits, I had to look at how we could actually house the exhibits in respect to this, you know, and we had to get a porta cabin to put existing exhibits of other cases into it so we could
and
free
all
up.
Has, all secured.
Oh, yeah, secured. So, like, I'm just saying, there was a lot of work went into it, you know, and it was something else, yeah. But we patience, and we got there. And one of the things I've always said to the team when we'd sit around the conference table, and I just say, well, look, at remember Adrian, because if one of us was killed, he'd be the very man sitting at this desk.
He was a detective himself.
And he would be doing his best to get justice for whichever one was gone.
Good motivation, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we needed to stay true to him. And we did, and every one of the team, like, you know, and it is a team effort, like, you know, it is a team effort, like, but it has to be managed and controlled, like, and that was my responsibility, you know.
There's lovely messages coming in for you. Pat is a fantastic, admirable man, fantastic books, always enjoyed reading them. That's from your former neighbours, Amy, Nolan, Mia, and Louis in Wexford.
Oh, yeah.
Read Pat's book during the early lockdowns, great read. Nice to hear him on the radio. Ask your guest, when he was stationed at Clonus, did he stay with my aunt Kathleen King, who offered boarding to Gardaí around that time?
No, I didn't, no.
He delayed now.
Yeah.
And by the way, King is a great Cavan name. Yeah. We've strayed far from Nathan Carter, but there are messages coming in saying the best venue for a Nathan Carter concert is Tintawn Theatre in Ballybunion in County Kerry. Saw him there last summer. He gives a great show. That's Catherine in Tralee. That's a gorgeous kind of either renovated or brand new theatre. I've seen it in footage. Nathan is playing at the Breffni Bash in Kingspan, in Breffni Park, in Cavan tonight. Mm. Shout out there to Sharon, who's going to be dancing the night away, says Rosaline. Yeah, so that's going
to
be,
tell her to bring our pink hat with her.
Bring her pink hat.
You know, but no, like, I have to say, in he is a very good artist.
For sure, yeah.
And he put on a brilliant show, and people who were into him were totally, you know, would love it. And he did deliver.
Yeah.
It's just not my type of music.
No, no, it isn't. You'd be in your comfort spot when you go back to Matt Malloy's in Westport.
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh, don't worry.
Come here, I hear you're, before I let you go, you're script writing at the moment.
Well, yeah, there, about 2 years ago, I wrote a idea for a fictional detective inspector, and I have six
it's kind of comedy,
in
is
a
it?
Series. Yeah, it's about serious murder, but how it was solved in a quirky type of way by a quirky character.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is you know, probably seen as a bit of an idiot, but he comes up with the goods at the end of the day, like, you know,
an Irish Columbo.
Yeah, an Irish Columbo in a way. So I have the six. And I had them written out, and it was floated around, and a production company in Northern Ireland were interested in it, so they said they'd like to develop it. Like, so I'm sort of that's that, you know.
You know your stuff, you know where to direct that for sure. Listen, Pat Murray, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Yeah.
Thanks for reviewing it, and good luck to Chloe, isn't it, that your daughter?
Cheryl.
Sorry, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Cheryl's daughter, and good luck, and enjoy Matt Malloy's tonight.
Oh, I will, surely. I'll be drinking a nice pint. You know, so,
responsibly. Himself responsibly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Pat. Safe travels.
Oliver.
We're going to take a quick break.
Email oliver@rte.ie.